Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, of course, since it is Wednesday, there was a brand new blog that popped up over there this morning. So swing on by, get yourself all caught up with what's going on. Of course, while you're there, you can click the link, and that'll take you over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. And, hey, you know the deal. You went all the way over there. You might as well like it. Don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Work Time, and Dan the Man is at
Dan Z-Man 3.
All right, Dan. Now, I'm sure everybody in the world by now got himself into a car accident yesterday. And as it turns out, it looked like he's going to be okay. He did some serious damage to an ankle and a leg, but they performed surgery, and obviously he's in the hospital recovering. But, Dan, I got to tell you, I had a big problem with the way the good old Mickey Mouse Network covered this at the start yesterday. I turned it on. You know, I flipped over to watch what I genuinely watch over there. And, you know, it was breaking news, so they had the Tiger Woods stuff on instead. And I got to be honest with you, Dan, the way they were covering it, I thought he was dead.
Yeah. That's, you know, everything I've seen.
You know, nobody said he had been injured. They just kept saying car accident, car accident, car accident. And it was like, okay, well, how the hell is he? You know, I mean, you can't leave out that kind of stuff if you're going to do this kind of reporting. You know, and I got to tell you, that really pissed me off. I was quite upset with the way they handled that because, honestly, it seemed like a cheap ploy to hit up ratings because you wanted to get people to flip over, you know, and stay with it to find out if he was alive or not. So I immediately turned it off. Once I found out he was alive, I turned it off. And then in more of what would be oddly a humorous spin to me, Dan, if this would have been you or I or anybody else involved in an accident, first thing the sheriff would have said is, we're looking into drugs and alcohol.
Oh, of course.
But they immediately shot that down. You know, I believe that was the very first statement they issued. And now the funny thing is, it takes generally 4 to 6 weeks to get a toxicology report. How do they have any idea what he was on? Is this sheriff psychic? Is California that cool, man, and their sheriffs are psychic? Because I'm not buying the sheriff's statement at all. You know, and even like today, his statement said that Tiger was not drunk and the crash was purely accident. And, you know, that is possible, but we're also talking about a guy who's recovering from a back surgery. And I'm going to guess probably has some pretty good painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now I hope that had absolutely nothing to do with why he had the accident. I hope it was legitimately just an accident. And I did see a reporter today who lives in California mentioned that he basically had the exact same kind of accident when he was younger, you know, and he wasn't on anything. It was literally just an accident. But the sheriff's name is Alex Villanueva, and I'm guessing that if he knows that Tiger wasn't drunk or taking any medication, he should be playing the lottery and getting out of law enforcement, because he's definitely a better prognosticator than anybody I know. You know, but again, if it was you or I, or, you know, your cousin or sister or mother or father, the first thing they would have said is, we're looking in to see if drugs and alcohol were involved in this incident. So I thought it was pretty shady of them to throw that out right away. How do you kind of take that?
Well, I mean, isn't it just, for lack of a better word, pretty shitty that that's exactly the route they're going to go, knowing that he had his issues in Florida around the time with his divorce? Or, you know, the coinciding family issues.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, I've got to wonder, no matter if or when his toxicology report comes back, I'm wondering if the sheriff's department even ordered it now after this, you know, this goof has come out and already said that it was an accident. So maybe they didn't even order it. See, if they did order it, I'm wondering if we'll ever, if the results will ever make it to the public. You know, I mean, this, you know, LA could just cover this up, but not the first time they've ever done anything like that. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if you never see anything. And again, I honestly hope that he wasn't, and this guy is correct. What bothers me is just the special treatment here, you know, because again, you or I or anybody we know would have been crucified in the media if this had happened to us. So I was baffled when I started, you know, it was just an accident. Well, you don't know. It's 24 hours old. You know, I mean, you have zero idea what the hell went on. You know, all you know is he had an accident at this point. So, you know, it was just kind of frustrating to, you know, listen and read and, you know, try to have this guy basically cover up what went on when you know they have an accident unit that goes out and studies things and figures out what happened and, you know, all that other stuff. So, I mean, it just smelled like huge cover-up, and we're not actually going to know if he did have alcohol in his system or if he was taking painkillers for his back or if he just happened to be on something else that we don't know about. So, but, you know, all in all, Dan, I don't want anything bad to happen to the guy. I mean, I'm not a over-the-moon Tiger Woods fan like a lot of people are, but obviously he changed the game of golf and really opened it up for, you know, blacks to have an opportunity to play more. So, hopefully he'll be able to fully recover and play again. But, as having a serious ankle injury, that it's not the easiest thing to recover from. So he's probably got a long road getting back. Do you think you could swing a golf club at that point?
No, I think it's
I think honestly, and the more important question for you that Tiger may have to face is, could you walk 18 holes? I mean, even right now with the shape you're in with your ankle, could it hold up for 18 holes of walking?
Post that surgery? No.
You know, and what about it now?
Possibly. I would need to take a break, though. I mean, this is my injury. What year is this? This was 2005. So I still have issues walking. It's never, you know, I don't know if it's the two screws that are in there, but it's never going to get better. And to be honest, Big Jack, mine happened in February. In June of that year, I had an interview for a local radio station in Chicago. And when I called, you know, that was before, man, it's like to feel old. It's only 2005, Big Jack, but that was before you know, Google Maps and all that good stuff, or Apple Maps, that not only gave you walking, driving directions, but also gave you bus directions and which buses to get on to get there. I actually had to call the radio station, speak to the receptionist to get the info on how to take the bus there. And she actually gave me the wrong stop to get off on, and I ended up walking 6 blocks to get there, 5 or 6. You know, it's not a lot when you're a normal, healthy person, but when you're just only, you know, coming off of surgery in 2 months and you're walking that, I didn't even, you know, I toughed it out. I didn't complain. I just walked it. When I walked into the radio station for my interview with the DJ, the first thing he says, he's like, "Is everything okay? You don't look so well." And I'm like, I was kind of lost for words because I wasn't trying, you know, I was trying to mask everything. And so I was like, I had surgery in February. And actually, I've only been walking for probably a month. And I lifted up my pant leg, and he looked at my ankle and goes, "Wow." He goes, "Please sit down." You know. And,
yeah, well, more importantly, did you get a job?
Yeah, it was an internship. So,
oh, okay.
But, yeah, I landed it, and I actually had to leave extra early every day just because of, well, I found the right bus stop that actually dropped you off in front of the radio station. So that made things a hell of a lot easier. But no, I mean, it doesn't matter that, I was Cedric, that Tiger is, you know, a gazillionaire or whatever he is. I don't know his money, but it doesn't matter that all the money he has that he can afford, you know, the doctors and yeah, all that good stuff. It's still going to take time for the body to heal. There's no amount of money that he can pay a doctor that's going to stop the swelling, the pain, and all that stuff. So I think it'll be some time before he gets back into golf. And obviously, you know, I'm not a big guy I wouldn't say I'm not a big guy. I'm not a guy who's big into golf. But from what I understand, you know, after his issues with, you know, after his divorce and all that, you know, Tiger had some trouble. And, you know, kind of lost his groove, and Tiger kind of got his groove back. And you've got to wonder, would this situation take him another 2-3 years to really get back into the swing of things, no pun intended. Because, you know, while the healing process and all that good stuff does take, you know, so much time, like my personal trainer told me, he's like, you're not going to feel fully mobile, fully comfortable, because he had broke both of his ankles, actually, when he was younger, so he had fun with that. But he's like, you're not going to feel fully comfortable until 1 year after you've had your surgery. He goes, regardless of your, you know, your physical therapy and all that, you're not going to get that comfortability back to where you're able to just do what you do for an entire year. He goes, it's physical. He goes, then it's mental. He's like, you know, and that, it was very true, because once I got off the crutches, I actually, you know, I don't know if this is just because I wanted to graduate college, but I was in my last semester of college, if you remember, Big Jack, and I went to school downtown Chicago. I lived in the suburbs. It was either forget that semester and go back again in the fall, or go to school that semester and graduate, you know, and I wanted to graduate. Granted, I had to do the internship that summer, but, you know, I still graduated in June, and, you know, my parents weren't driving me, you know, 40 miles back and forth every day, or however many days I went to school. You know, my dad dropped me off at the train station 5 minutes from our house, and, you know, somebody would pick me up. I always had to call for a ride. And I walked, so like 10 city blocks. Well, I guess I crutch walked. So I sucked it up, and, you know, I got it down in 10, 20 minutes with the crutches. But once those crutches came off, I had to leave. I had to catch an earlier train because it took me 30, 45 minutes to walk 10 blocks because I was baby stepping every bit of the way. So, you know, and then, you know, once I got used to walking again, it still takes time. You know, you can't just go out there and run. obviously Tiger doesn't run, but you got to keep in shape, and he's not going to be able to do all that with the ankle. You know, I'm not going to compare myself to any professional athlete like Tiger, but I mean, even, you know, take it back to Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas was a big man. He's a giant. I've seen him in person, you know, standing next to him. Well, granted, I was 10 years old, so he was a giant to me. But if you remember, after his ankle injury, his career did not continue to go on that upswing. You know, after that, you know, he bounced from Toronto to Oakland, Toronto, whatever it was, you know, and was strictly DHing. So, you know, it's going to take Tiger some time, and I wish him the best. But, you know, you've got to wonder, with everything he's done in that sport, you know, does he go back? You know, does he become – is he a golfer for life? Is he like a Jack Nicklaus or, you know, those guys, a Chichi Rodriguez, who are, you know, on their deathbeds, but that are still rolling out there golfing? I just like Chichi. He was great for TV back in those days.
Sorry, my headphones came loose there. I was running out of juice. But, yeah, you know, and I guess that probably will be the question now is, will he, you know, I'm sure he'll probably golf again. The question will be, will he ever competitively golf? You know, will he be able to actually compete with, you know, the players that are on the tour right now? And I unfortunately kind of have a feeling that may be a big no.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was having a difficult enough time, you know, with just this back injury, and then he had, I believe he had a leg injury before. I don't know if this was the same leg that is injured now that he injured in the accident. They didn't say. So, yeah, it may have just been a, you know, this may just kind of put the cap on him as a competitive golfer. And you know, that's too bad, but obviously he can still do quite a bit for the sport. So.
Yeah. You know, but do you continue to want to work with it? You know, do you join the NBC Golf Channel or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, obviously, you know, like you mentioned, he has plenty of money. I mean, he could just go and be a dad. You know, he does have two young kids. You know, we just saw his son. I forgot the son's name. But they just golfed together. They did the father-son thing at a tournament. So, you know, it's possible he may just, hey, you know, I'm going to go be a father now and just spend my time with my kids. So, you know, that wouldn't be bad at all. But all right, well, let's move on. You know, like Dan said, we wish Tiger all the best, but let's move on here. Dan, there were some, you know, relatively what I describe as interesting signings, and this one that really caught my eye is the Giants, the San Francisco Giants, stepped out and they signed Scott Kazmir. Now, of course, it's the invitation to spring training with, you know, the minor league deal. But, you know, Kazmir, he's 36. He might be turning 37 soon. He hasn't pitched in the majors since 2016. He did actually pitch last year for a team by the name of Eastern in the Constellation Energy League. Dan, I can tell you I know absolutely nothing about that league. He went 2-1 with a 4.20 ERA in four games. Three of those were starts. You know, Kazmir, you know, at one point in time was looked at as a top lefty, but for whatever reason, he just continued to struggle with injuries. Do you possibly see him making the team?
I want to say no, but at the same time, knowing the way the game works today, I think it's highly possible.
You know, and I guess
something good, but he's got nothing.
You know, do you wonder if maybe if he doesn't make the team out of spring training, you think at this point, since it seems like he still wants to play, you think he would accept a minor league assignment and maybe down the road they could get something out of him, you know, around, you know, All-Star break or somewhere around there?
I don't see why not. I mean, you know, obviously we've seen a lot of changes in, you know, Major League Baseball, the minor league system. And granted, if, let's just say, like Ian Stewart back in the day when he puts this great pickup by Theo, and Theo's like, screw you, you're going down to single-A ball to get paid your $1 million or $2 million a year, whatever, to play down there. Granted, you know, that would still happen, but I think with the way the system is set up now, it might not be such a bad thing to be in that that high AAA. I forgot how they classified it. But then again, I mean, you know, is it the love of the game you want to keep playing? Because if it is, that will keep the guy in there. But if it's not about the love of the game, and he's looking for some money, he's definitely not going to stick with a minor league contract. What was it like? What did we talk about? $700-$800 a week? You know, compared to he was probably getting paid that a game.
So yeah, I guess if you know the key is if he can get left-handers out, you know, they'll find a spot for him in the bullpen. So, you know, I mean, that's just how things work. You're always looking for people to get left-handed hitters out. So, you know, it's possible that, you know, we may see him coming out of the Giant bullpen.
Yeah, Bochy's not there anymore for the single man per batter.
Yeah, so... you know, and then we had another, you know, we can call it kind of blast from the past. The Braves signed Travis Snyder to a minor league deal. Now, Snyder hasn't played since he was with Pittsburgh back in 2015 at the major league level. He did play for Reno in AAA in 2019. You know, if you remember Travis Snyder, he was a prospect with the Cleveland Indians, you know, and he bounced around a little bit, you know, here and there. But, you know, it was always kind of interesting. He always kind of had potential. And you just kind of wonder, and then I'm realizing I'm wrong because he never played for the Indians. He was a Toronto Blue Jay, so I'm wondering who I just met up with. But either way, he's been out of the major 2015 and out of baseball since 2019. You know, the Braves, and I'm kind of curious your take on this, Dan. I'm under the impression that they're quite concerned about their outfield. Because not only did they sign Snyder, but they claimed Philip Irvin off waivers from the Cubs. They claimed Guillermo Heredia off waivers from the Mets. And they signed Abraham Almonte, who spent last year, I believe, with the Padres. You know, I'm not quite sure what this says about the Braves outfield, except for the fact that they must have some concerns.
You know, I was wondering why you're talking about that, because don't they have a pretty solid all-star outfield?
Well, you know, they did re-sign Marcelo Zuna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have Ronald Acuna Jr., and it finally looks like their top prospect, Christian Pyche, is going to take over the center field job. That leaves the what would be considered the fourth outfield position to Ender in Enciarte. I wanted to make sure I got it right. And then they have Johan Camargo as a utility guy. But remember, Camargo struggled so badly last year, they sent him to minor league camp. So, I don't really know. You know, they did add Jake Lamb, but obviously he's not an outfielder. Austin Riley is penciled in to be the starting third baseman finally. So, he played outfield last year, so they have a little flexibility. But I'm guessing they have a concern somewhere that we don't know about with these signings, right? Or am I just kind of coming up with my own conspiracy theory?
No, if you want to go – well, let me just go with the Johan Camargo. Fantasy-wise, this guy is a great pickup because of the multi-positions. Again, fantasy-wise, it doesn't really do anything for you because you never end up starting him unless it's that off day. And he never really seemed to live up to whatever he was supposed to do. I don't know if you're the Braves. Do you continue with that or you try to move on from him? Sorry to say that. I don't want to sound like, what's his name from Seattle? We're not going to get in trouble, right? We're not going to get in trouble. We don't have to resign, right? Because I said that. It's probably time to move on from with him. I like Marcell Ozuna. Let's be honest. That outfield tandem in Miami, can you imagine if those guys were able to stick together? Obviously, Miami, whatever. It would have been, again, we don't really know what A-Rod, what Jeter was thinking. I would have kept that outfield together. That's just me, but whatever. The downside with Ozuna, I think, would be the consistency seems to kind of be off. He has a pretty good year, not so good, hot, okay, And then I wouldn't say he's injury prone, but I think he's due. Realistically, are you looking at a guy who's going to was the season shortened? I don't remember. We haven't gotten that far, right? So, realistically, do you see Ozuna starting 140 games? I don't know. I think a safe number would definitely – I think you could go all in on 100 games, definitely, to 100 and maybe 25. So, if we – stick to 162, or even if they drop it down to 156 or 8 or whatever it was, you're still going to want to make up for some 50-odd games. So, theoretically. So, maybe it's not so much of concerns in the front office by making these moves. Maybe it's just a preparation. Maybe not a preparation, but like a savings account, right? You're trying to give yourself that cushion. Did I explain that correctly? Can you translate to regular people English so they understand what the hell I'm talking about?
Probably not. But it wasn't too bad. I think you were okay there. So I just wonder. Do you think? Obviously they've all spent time on major league rosters. It does look like possible the Braves will carry one more outfielder on the bench. Being one of these guys, you like Irvin, you like Heredia, you like Lamonte, you like Schneider. Is there one that possibly grabs that spot?
I want to take a look at their numbers, but why does Heredia stand out to me?
I think just because he's bounced around, and I guess if you had to kind of define it, he's probably had the best major league career out of those guys. He was actually a starter in Seattle back in 17 and 18, He played 123 and 125 games back then. So his name is a little more prevalent than than the other guy. Irving's never been a full time starter. I believe Almonte got a little bit of an opportunity with Cleveland, and I'm pretty sure I'm right this time. I'm going to double check that right now, but I'm pretty sure I was correct about that one. He spent a couple years there and got some at bats, but he's never played over 100 major league games. Philip Irving was the guy who was kind of looked at. Cincinnati really liked him, and they were kind of hoping he would be Billy Hamilton's replacement. But it just didn't go that way for them. And, of course, it didn't help that, he was hitting .086 at the time they moved him to Seattle. So, Heredia is probably the biggest name out of the four. And I want to double check. He swings a left-handed bat. Oh, no, he's righty. Almonte's a switch hitter. Schneider is a lefty, but, and obviously none of the, they're not looking at any of these guys to play 140 games. It'd just be a bench and maybe a defender off the bench. So I don't know. Is there one you favor?
It's almost like a toss-up, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. And don't forget that the Braves, again, with this kind of odd whatever they're doing, they also signed Jason Kipnis as a non-roster invitee, and they added, and I always butcher this name, he was with the Twins for quite a while, they added Ihar Adarinza, another utility guy, and could possibly be Camargo's replacement. If, like you mentioned, they do decide to part ways.
So, I mean, wouldn't you say the only real concern would be for Camargo? And
Obviously, anytime you're giving a job to a rookie, you have to be a little concerned. They may struggle. A little bit there. Like about Ozuna, obviously the biggest problem with Ozuna is the fact that he is a butcher in left field. So I'm sure the Braves were really hoping that they would add the full-time DH and they would have the perfect spot for that. They look like they're set to compete in what's obviously going to be a very tough NL East. We'll have to kind of see how that goes. I mean, they should get nothing but getting better, especially when Mike Soroka comes back. I'm not sure if he's going to be ready to make the opening day roster, but it shouldn't be too much longer after that, barring any setbacks. But, they did add Charlie Morton. They did add Drew Smyly. So, Smyly, who, has been hurt forever, too, another one of those guys. So, if the rotation stays healthy and they get Soroka back, they'll be right there and ready to go once, we ring the bell in, April we start this year?
I think so.
I mean, we're not starting at the end of March. Did we actually start in April? So... just found it kind of weird that they went on like this odd little bizarre signing of veteran outfielders. So.
Well, depending, because we obviously, granted, everyone's starting to get to spring training, we really don't know how it's going to be conducted, do we? Going to bubble some teams up? Are they going to try to keep everyone maybe a little bit more, secluded from each other so that one team is all together all the time, So with that being said, it might be nice to have the veteran experience to kind of help lead the locker room. Not so much lead the locker room, but be there for that younger talent.
So, yeah, you know, and I mean, they're supposed to start playing games on Sunday. So we'll see how that, you know, how that shakes out, you know, how that works and, you know, where it kind of goes. But who, you know, knows? So, you know, and then we had a minor, what you'd call a minor trade today. The Pirates acquired outfielder Dustin Fowler from the A's for cash consideration. Dan, if you remember Fowler, he actually made his big league debut with the Yankees back in 2017. And in his very first game, he was the guy who tried to make the catch. I believe it was foul territory in right field and ended up tearing up his knee. So, and then he got traded for the Sonny Gray deal. 2018, he did appear in 69 games for the A's, but he's been in the minors with them ever since. So, you know, obviously it's a big plus for him going to Pittsburgh. He'll probably, I would guess, he'll make the major league roster and he'll get an opportunity to play. But he's just, you know, he's just 25, so, you know, he could have, a lot of years left depending on, or excuse me, 26 now. So, yeah, he could have a lot of years left. But, yeah, just, you know, like I said, a minor deal. So.
And wasn't was that like one of the first games? I would say Big Jack, how do I remember this? But I pretty much watch every game opening week, so.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was opening week or, but it was, you know, obviously his very first game.
Yeah. I remember it clearly.
Yeah.
Wasn't that down in Houston?
You know, I'm not quite sure. I don't remember where it was. You might be right. I just remember him going into foul territory and then, you know, going down to try to catch and the spike sticking. And you know how I am with knees. After that, I can't watch that because I'm, you know, I'm squeamish there when it comes to that. So I, you know, it was just frightening for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember. I just can't remember if it was, you know, because after the Houston, you know, the Astros knocked the Yankees out a couple of times. I guess it doesn't really matter. It still sucks for the kid. I totally remember that play. And I even want to say, you know, the announcers were making comments about how that the outfield was, the foul lines were set up. So,
yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, good for him. Hopefully it becomes an every
In another move, the Red Sox have designated Marcus Walden for assignment. Now, you know, I believe that the Red Sox were hoping that Walden was going to be a candidate for their closer role in 2020. You know, in 2019, he actually appeared in 70 games. He went 9-2 with a couple saves and a 3.81 ERA. But just like the Red Sox pitching staff last year, he went down. He appeared in 15 games, went 0-2, did pick up a save, but Danny had a 9.45 ERA. So my, you know, being that he's going to be 32, my guess is that after he gets through his 10 days, the Red Sox will release him and allow him to go, you know, kind of their, you know, their separate ways there, as they have added some, you know, some bullpen pieces this off season. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, somebody else claims Walden and tries to maybe get him back into the form that he had before 2020 hit. So, but yeah, so that kind of catches up on, you know, what's pretty much going around in, you know, in baseball. I did see that, your guy Jake Odorizzi did draw a little interest. Apparently the Phillies have reached out again, and so have the Angels. You know, and I think you and I have been saying all along that he's kind of what the Angels need. So you hope or finally figure out we're going to get something done with frickin' Odorizzi here?
I think so. I mean, it's not just because you and I think so, but I mean, it's probably one of the most logical places is for him to land in L.A. or Anaheim. You know, we've talked about it countless times, you know, that the pitching needs to just be more, a little bit more secure, and maybe you'll get that a better offense, so to speak, out of the players on the field. But is it more just a matter of they're always trying to compete with such high numbers that they don't always look to be what is expected? It, you know, it's kind of, they both play off each other. So I think if they were to land him, it would definitely shore up another spot for them. I mean, he did well in Minnesota. He played really well in Tampa. Tampa. So I think it's a move that they need to make.
Yeah, you know, and I guess, like, I was kind of curious, you know, my question would be, what the hell took so long? You know, I mean, you know, obviously you've looked at your roster, you knew what you had coming in. Why in the hell did it take you so long to even start looking at him?
Well, sadly, I think he's a guy that you know, presidents, GMs kind of expected to be there through it all. So, you know, that could be part of it. And then not knowing where the league was going to be by this time, I think that plays a big factor into it too. You know, meaning, are they starting on time? Is spring training going to happen? You know, do we really want to start making moves to spend money on a guy that we're only going to sign for a couple of seasons? I really don't see him getting more than, what you say, two with an option, if he's lucky.
Yeah, you know, that would, I would think, you know, and at this point, I honestly think he may just have to take a one-year deal. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, until things get back to some kind of normalcy, you know, guys with short-term contracts, you know, that are anticipated to get, you know, shorter-term contracts will probably be the last guys off the board.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, obviously he would be a good ad for either team, but I really think the Angels need him more. You know, they look like they actually have a shot out there this year. You know, the A's, you know, the A's are down, the Mariners are still kind of in that rebuild mode. So it's really just you and the Astros, and, you know, the Astros obviously have to go without Justin Verlander. You know, it's just kind of a wait and see until Lance McCullers gets hurt again. So, I think they could really compete and, you know, maybe, you know, if not for the division wild card spot. So, you know, adding someone like Odorizzi obviously bolsters the rotation. So I don't know, again, what the hang-up is here, unless, of course, he's looking for multiple years and they don't want to do that. So.
And there, you know, that could be a big part of it. So, I mean, I guess that's one of the things we didn't really discuss when we were wondering why he was still out there is, you know, term of a contract, because with the issues that they had last year and the negotiations, you know, had they gotten that far, you know, had it gone on that long this year, can you imagine signing Jake Odorizzi to a one-year contract for, I don't know, just put out a number, even just $4 or $5 million, and then, you know, you're still responsible for a large portion of that? Because let's be honest, if you're an agent, and while, you know, the players, they can do certain, you know, with the negotiations, they're going to agree to so much pay. But you would think with a guy like his agent would be able to work something in to where in the event of COVID, you know, a delay because of COVID or however they want to put it, he's still entitled to so much money or, you know, another opportunity for another year at the same rate or even higher. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of factors that could play into it with a guy who potentially would be getting a shorter term deal and spending that money.
Yeah, you know, obviously I would just like to see him signed and get in a camp because he definitely, you know, he definitely belongs on a major league roster, and the fact that,
yeah,
you know, he's from the outside looking in, it's just kind of a joke at this point with he handled this stuff. So, kind of me.
There are the negatives. Yeah, there are the negatives. Comps, you know, like Jake Arrieta, for one. And I'm not saying he's a bad pitcher, but you remember that the non-spring training really had an effect on him and kind of delaying his, you know, I'm not saying delaying his starts, but just getting his groove. So it took some time. But then, you know, the opposite end, you have Lance Lynn, who I wouldn't say he was, you know, completely stellar, but his game didn't seem super affected by the time off when he signed with Milwaukee late. Was it Milwaukee or St. Louis?
It was Minnesota.
So
yeah, but all right, I want to switch up gears on you here because Schomburg, Stu, and I have been going back and forth on this all day. You know, obviously the Bulls have been playing better. You know, they're 14-16. Zach LaVine made the All-Star team, so everybody's on the bandwagon about them getting in the playoffs and then winning the NBA championship because that's what you do when a team starts to play better. Tonight, Dan, they play the Minnesota Timberwolves. I believe, and I'm going to double check, the Timberwolves are 7-25. I believe that gives them the worst record in the NBA, and yes, it does. Now, I was telling Stu that with the way the Bulls have been playing, this sets up perfectly for them to stumble into an upset. Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Dan. If I was a betting man, I would take the Timberwolves and the points. I saw that the line was like 5.5. So I would probably go that route, even though they're a horrible team, but I know how the Bulls are in these situations. what's kind of your overall take on the Bulls, who, you know, have won the last two games. They had a blowout against Houston.
Yeah.
So where do you sit? I mean, they're 14-16, and they do currently hold the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference.
You know, I'd like to see them farther above 500, but I think they're kind of catching a groove, and these guys are, you know, working well together. I definitely think they're in NBA terms, a playoff team this year. I think they make the playoffs. I think they have a chance. Never mind. If they're the eighth seed, no, but if they're able to bump up, I think they have a chance to at least pull out the first series.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, you know, you always need those teams that go out and get beat up real easily in the first series.
Yeah.
They both do that really well as an eighth seed. So,
yeah, well, I wouldn't think they would get beat up. I think they definitely put together a 6-7 game series because I think, you know, kind of like what you're –
Even against the top team, you know, I mean, you don't see like Philadelphia or a Brooklyn just taking them apart really quickly.
No, I still see two games for the Bulls if they were to take on Brooklyn. I'm not saying it's going to be a Bulls, you know, game four or, you know, game three, and it's
or game
25. Yeah, you know, with a 25-point lead at the end of the game. No, I'm not saying that. But I do think they have everything it takes to pull out at least two games against a team with a big three, like the Nets have.
Oh, you're a lot more positive than I am. I would see them just getting trounced by a Brooklyn, or, you know, I could see them getting a game from Philadelphia because that's just kind of how Philadelphia is in the playoffs. But I would expect Brooklyn to sweep them and then Philadelphia to beat them 4-1. So,
well, you know, I mean, Brooklyn's playing well, but there's been some games I've watched where I'm like, what are these guys doing?
Yeah, well, you know, on the plus side, you know, Brooklyn doesn't play defense, so at least the Bulls will score.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think they compete with them.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the funny thing. You know, Thibodeau's not here anymore.
No, he's with the Knicks. That's why they're playing up right now as well.
I need to start watching more Knicks games. But they're never on TV anymore. What happened?
Well, they stink. Nobody wants to put them on.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, it just seems like the Bulls still play defense. You know what I mean? And I felt like that was one of Tibbs' big things. You know, because to me, it was amazing to watch the NBA on TV and watch Russell Westbrook and James Harden, you know, and these guys from the West just kind of tear it up, and then getting to see them live against the Bulls and to watch Jimmy Butler, who wasn't Jimmy Butler yet, just shut down James Harden and beat the Rockets in Chicago. You know what I mean? And this was years ago. So, you know, and it still kind of impresses me that the Bulls are able to kind of keep that defense alive. So, that's where I think they get a couple games. Again, you know, the first win I think would be a decent one, but if they were able to squeeze out a second one, you know, we're not talking 20 points. I think we're talking 2, maybe 1, you know, because of a screw-up on a foul or something. It wouldn't be super, you know, the Bulls win, but, you know, they have some factors in there that help them win.
Yeah, and, you know, but before I forget, I have to remind anybody, do not bet your money on anything I say. Just because I like the Timberwolves and I would take the points, and I did see the line is down to 4.5 now. It was 5.5 when I looked earlier. Don't spend your hard-earned money on anything I have to say when it comes to gambling. That's just how it goes here. So I wanted to warn you quickly.
Yeah, you know, is there a way where you can give the wrong advice so that people don't take it and then get paid for giving that advice?
If it was, I could do it. You know, that's kind of how things work out for me. You know, I mean, well, honestly, I think if people would have bet against every prediction I've ever made on the podcast, they would probably be pretty rich.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other part of your research to pick if a team was going to lose, you know, obviously back in, would be to ask myself, Schomburg Stu, and Mr. Fantasy, and if we all agree, then you say yes, and you let everyone know, don't pick. We never win.
Well, you can just go back to, you know, the Super Bowl. We all had Kansas City. You know, and look how that worked out.
So, for
whatever it is, when we're in agreement, it just kind of blows up in our face.
I thought you, Schomburg, Stu, definitely were taking Tampa.
He went the other way. But I did see what maybe, you know, I don't know if it would be great news for you, but I think it could really help out your fantasy basketball team. Apparently, the Mavericks are very interested in dealing your guy, Kristaps Porzingis. And the rumor is that the Golden State Warriors are the team that have stepped up and are interested in maybe making a deal. you know, dude, if he goes to the Warriors, that could really improve his offensive game for you.
Well, not only that, does that improve them?
Well, it should. I mean, obviously, depending on what they're giving up to get him, but I assume, you know, Dallas isn't going to want too much. You know, and it, you know, what's funny is he would kind of fit that role that Kevin Durant did there with them. You know, he would be the big man that could shoot the three, and they really don't have that now. So it, you know, it could be a really nice fit. And I know he averages a little over 20 for the Mavericks. You know, that could go up 5 or 6 points with the way the Warriors play offense. So that could be, you know, kind of a big move. You know, obviously it's not enough to make them, you know, the Golden State Warriors that they used to be and, you know, win title after title and all that. But I definitely think it improves their team. You know, so that would be kind of exciting for you, right? If they,
yeah,
they managed to do that, make that deal.
I think I'd be back on the Warriors bandwagon.
You know, cause, you know, the Warriors are another team. You know, they're hanging out there at the bottom. You know, they're the eighth seed right now, but they are technically tied with the Nuggets for the seventh seed. So, you know, if you know, it looks like they may get in after having just a dismal season last year. So, you know, an ad like Porzingis could really, really help them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so you throw on your foil hat if you feel like it, but obviously it was just a goal to get LeBron back into, you know, back to, or back, he was never there, to, into the West and join the Lakers to kind of, you know, we don't have to go into it, but bring it back, the Lakers back to their glory, this and that. But it's just kind of funny how it happened the way it happened with, once he joined the West, it seemed like the Warriors just, with injuries and everything, fell apart. You know, I've never seen a team that was like them just stay together and just completely kind of fall apart like that. The Jordan Bulls didn't do that. Sorry, I had to do one of those. I had to do it. But, you know, what's your take on that? I mean, obviously,
well, you know,
I don't think this was any kind of setup, but it just worked out that way.
Yeah, you know, it ended up being, you know, some bad luck for the Warriors. I mean, what, you know, we're going on 2 years without Klay Thompson. You know, Steph hardly played last year. So, you know, and then obviously Durant leaving wasn't the best thing for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it, you know, it just kind of fell into place where, you know, LeBron ended up being, you know, in the right spot. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, the NBA was going to do everything in their power to give LeBron the tools he needed to get them into the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was going to happen, you know, and it did. You know, and it didn't help their ratings a bit, even though they thought it would, and they would be back where they wanted to be, and you know, whatever it was, the ratings stunk. They still stink, and NBA just hasn't learned its lesson. So, Don't forget, the podcast is available for you to listen to whenever you want. Tune in to Dr.